This is the Find Your Focus podcast with Shootproof. We chat with inspiring and creative entrepreneurs to encourage, empower, and equip you to take the next steps in your photography business. We want you to leave each episode with actionable steps so that you can gain confidence, book your calendar, and earn more income with your passion. So grab some coffee or your drink of choice and let's get to it. Hey everyone, I'm Logan Fay and the host of the Find Your Focus podcast with Shootproof. Today I'm talking to Mike Glatzer, who is a portrait photographer who helps creatives and brands tell their story. There's a catch. Mike is a full-time biomedical engineer and part-time photographer, and he doesn't have any desire to quit his full-time job. Something that I love about this interview is that Mike discusses why it is okay to keep your full-time job and do photography part-time. So many of us feel like the dream is to do photography full-time, when in reality, it's okay if you don't want that. He also discusses how having a full-time job has affected his pricing and things that you need to consider before going full-time. Let's get started with Mike. Hey, Mike, thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely, Logan. Happy to be here.
So tell us about how you got into photography and where you are now.
It's one of my favorite stories of all time. My uncle is a professional wildlife photographer. He's been a photographer since before I was born. He's got this incredibly illustrious career. He was originally doing stop-in portraits at Sears, but worked his way up to doing the 1% weddings in the New York tri-state area.
Wow.
Got tired of dealing with that crowd because they're quirky at that level and decided, I'm going to do wildlife photography. So then he ended up getting booked by National Geographic to be an underwater photographer. Now he's doing his own deal, shooting above water animals and all that kind of stuff, leading workshops. He's now a Canon EOL. So incredible, incredible guy. Halfway between the underwater photography and becoming a Canon EOL, I picked up a film camera, as everybody does when they're younger. My dad was his lighting assistant when he shot weddings, so he just happened to have one lying around. I screwed around with it, messed around, started playing with it, said, yeah, this is kind of fun. I kind of like this. And talked with my uncle and he said, okay, well, you want to go out and let's take some pictures of birds or something and you can see what it's really like. And I'm like, yeah, let's absolutely do it. So we go out to Montauk, Long Island, so Orient Point specifically. And we're going along the beach and we see a man-made, you know, nest for some birds. It's a telephone stand with a big platform on it. And we see this huge nest on it with an osprey. Okay. An osprey is a fish hawk with about a 6-foot wingspan, right? Really big bird.
Yeah.
We plop down. I'm messing around with my little film camera with, I think I had like a 24 to 140 millimeter zoom on it. And my uncle has a 600 millimeter lens on a tripod with a Canon 1D Pro body, looking the professional he is. He's getting some shots. Knocking him out. I'm getting crap. Eventually he says, okay, you want to hop behind my camera and learn how to use it? I said, absolutely. So I hop behind this lens. He shows me how the buttons, how to properly hold the camera, the lens, all that. All that's good. So I'm getting some pictures of the bird in the nest, getting some good shots. I'm thinking, yeah, I could do this totally. Well, next thing I know, my uncle starts tapping me on the shoulder going, Mike, there's one flying by with a fish in its talons. I'm 15 at this point. I'm going, what? Oh my gosh. So I look up in the sky and there's this osprey flying by indeed with a fish in its talon. If you've ever done any kind of shooting with a scope or you've worked with a microscope, it's the same idea. Our eyes see this huge giant field of view, but with any kind of scope or microscope, it gets narrowed down significantly. Mm-hmm. Even though the bird's many, many hundreds of yards away, I'm trying to get a 6-foot bird into the field of view that feels like, I don't know, 6 inches compared to the entire sky.
Yes.
So I'm like doing this crazy jig, trying to get this, you know, bird in the viewfinder. The lens is all over the place. My uncle keeps tapping me on the shoulder going, he's getting away. Mike, he's getting away. Mike, he's getting away. Finally, boom, he pushes me into the sand, hops behind the camera, and I hear 12 frames a second rattle off, brrr, nails the bird. Bird flies away. He goes, hey, he's gone. You can try again now.
Oh my God.
Now, mind you, that just was the first time. He did this to me 2 more times. So 3 times total, I ended up with my butt in the sand. And at the third time, I was like, screw this. I'm going to nail this stupid shot. Literally, that's what hooked me into photography.
Oh my God.
So I'm kind of have a little bit of like that vindictive, like, I'm going to nail this stupid thing in the back of my head every time I'm doing one of my crazy creative portrait shoots. That's what got me into it. I did sports and wildlife starting off because I think that would be great. Then through college, I was the vice president of the photography club. We did classes, learned flash, did portrait work. Then through a series of hilarious events, ended up shooting that same uncle. his daughter, my cousin's wedding, first wedding ever shot. I was not told I was shooting this until about 6 months before the wedding. And I wasn't asked, I was told I was shooting it. So lost my mind really quickly, found some people who would let me second shoot for him, had two weddings under my belt, shot that wedding, ended up shooting wedding for 6 years, and then slowly transitioned to portraits. And now I'm here, you know, crazy maniac.
That's quite a story.
It's an adventure.
And what else do you do besides photography?
I am also a giant nerd. I am a biomedical engineer. For the last 9 years, I've been designing novel medical devices. I've got 6 patents to my name. I've designed anything from spinal implants to wheelchair accessories to skin biopsy pens to floor mats that shoot the bottom of your feet with a disinfectant spray to applicators for skin creams or acne treatments. I just recently worked on an autism diagnostic device. And now I just started a new job where I am a project manager for all kinds of engineering projects. So it's fun, very exciting, and super cool.
That is amazing. I love that you have 2 jobs, and we're going to talk a lot about that today. That's what we're going to focus on. I want to start with, a lot of photographers have the goal of going full-time and quitting their 9-to-5 job. That's the photographer dream. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us why having a full-time job and a photography business is what works for you?
It works for me for 2 main reasons. Number one, sanity, which I know sounds completely paradoxical for all the work I do.
I was going to say, wait a second.
Right. As most people consider engineering, math, science, it's very, I think that's left brain, one-sided, very detail-oriented, technical, whatever. And then you've got photography, which is this beautiful, artistic, free-form method of creation and all the romantic notions about that. For me, having both in my life balances out my brain and balances out my sanity, because I get to be technical, I get to be detailed, which I really, really love. And then I also get to do photography, which gets to explore and work with that creative side that lets me do things I normally wouldn't do. That's why I enjoy having both. The other thing too, that's fun. Common misconception is engineering is a very technical, by the books, rigid thing. It's actually very, very creative, especially what I do, which is novel product development. Taking napkin sketches and then creating a full medical device that actually is going to help someone in their life. So there's a lot of original thought, original creation that comes out of that. So they're not as far apart as people would think.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's so interesting to hear you talk about it, because when you think engineer, you don't think creative. So it's right. Really interesting that, you know, in your case, it does mean creative. I like hearing how those two, photography and engineering, go together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And for me, it's interesting how one has fed into the other. Mm-hmm. So like my photography has helped my engineering life. My engineering has helped my photography life. I know I'm very lucky in that regard, that I can actually take the lessons from both and apply it to the other and marry and meld them together to a very unique skill set that gives me joy every single day. So very, very fortunate about that.
Yeah, I've said before on a few episodes that we've done where people are saying, oh, well, I used to be a teacher and decided to do photography. And I always can relate to that because I was a teacher for 7 years. When I first decided to do photography full time, I was thinking, well, I just wasted 7 years of my life plus 4 years of college. I realized so quickly that that was completely untrue. There are so many things that I can take from what I learned in college and what I learned in the 7 years of teaching and apply it to my photography business. And I would not be the photographer I am today without that background. So I always love hearing about how people take the skills from their job, their either full-time job or past job, whatever it might be, and apply them to their photography business.
Absolutely.
So what things have you implemented in your photography business that have helped you manage your time? Because everyone knows if you have a photography business and a full-time job, it is not the easiest thing to keep up with.
The things I've implemented are a combination of systems and automations, various software pieces, and honestly, a lot of education. So from the automation standpoint, I invested in a CRM software a couple of years ago, probably a couple of years too late, quite honestly. I use a platform called Dubsado, which is fantastic because I'm this kind of nerdy process person with the engineering background. I really enjoy the fact that I could create a automated workflow. If a client inquires through my website, I barely have to do anything. Like, it schedules the consultation, it sends them the pricing information, it sends the proposal, the contract, the invoices, I'll have maybe another follow-up consultation once I've sent out like an image sample inspiration request so they can send me pictures so I know what they want to achieve. Mm-hmm. Review that. I'll do some work to figure out the location, the timing, maybe get a hair and makeup artist. And then it's just, okay, confirm with the client, which again, the CRM software does that. I show up to the shoot. We have a great time. I do the editing, throw it up on a Shootproof gallery, and everything's done through Shootproof. Well, a lot of things are done through Shootproof, ordering, proofing, that kind of stuff. And so like designing a system where I have minimal touch points, mandatory, frees up a whole lot of time.
Definitely.
So learning and implementing that was huge. The other thing is I use task managers. So I use a software called ClickUp for mm-hmm. just my business tasks. So I'm always keeping track of what things I need to do just from a business standpoint. So that's my accounting, taxes, marketing stuff, blogging, social media, crazy ideas for new things I want to try, or even my creative shoots that are not always client related. So that helps me keep track of everything, because holding that all in your brain, it'll explode.
It does not work well.
Right. So having that there really helps. And then the other thing too is just the education standpoint, learning where to outsource things, what I can outsource, what needs to stay like under my specific umbrella, and also how to use the tools I have to the utmost efficiency. So for example, I switched from using Lightroom for editing over to Capture One because I could edit 6 photos simultaneously that were similar, but just different enough where you can't just go copy paste across the board. It's really easy to cull. It's really easy to edit. My clients, if they hear this, they're going to lose their minds, because I usually tell them, oh yeah, it takes like 2 weeks for me to go through the proofs and do the global edits. Mm-hmm. I still shoot some weddings. I'll knock out a wedding like culling and global edits in 8 hours.
Yeah.
So like it's 1, 2, 3, mm-hmm. doing that kind of stuff to help figure out like how to get the most efficiency, offload where I can, and use automations to really take the load off of me so that I can do the day job, I can do the photography job, and just shoot, because that's the part I love, and also have dinner at a reasonable hour.
Right. That's always a plus. Yeah, I can definitely relate to having a client management system. I did not really use anything for the first year and a half, 2 years. And oh my gosh, when I finally got it set up, I use HoneyBook, and I also use Tabe for the podcast. Having both of those, it blows my mind how much more organized, less stress, and how much happier I am with both of them. Like, I don't even have the words for it because they both are just mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that's really powerful too, that not everyone realizes. And this is part of the education standpoint that I do, which mm-hmm. is a lot on productivity, task management, and many other things. A lot of people get hung up on, oh my gosh, I have so much stuff to do. When really, if they just wrote it down mm-hmm. and made an actual list of the things to do,
yes,
it's a third as intimidating as your brain was making it out to be. And it's way more achievable. And you're like, oh, I can tackle this.
Right.
The fact that you write it down somewhere, and if you can, put it in some kind of like calendar, task automation software, whatever. Mm-hmm. Now you don't have to keep all that in your head. You can focus on the thing that's in front of you. Yeah. Then you get a reminder, oh, hey, you need to work on this. Oh, yeah, I guess I do. Cool. So much better.
Yes, that was literally my life about 3 weeks ago with the podcast. I was managing, you know, every person that I interview, I'm talking to them while I'm talking to probably like 10 other people at the same time, mm-hmm. managing what task I'm on in the production process. And I finally got set up with Tave. My mind is blown. I'm like, oh, I'm actually not that stressed out.
Yeah. And CRM softwares are reasonably priced, a little on the pricier side, depending on where you are in your journey as a freelancer. It's one of those things, if you can figure out how to ascribe value to the dollars you're investing into that, to say, okay, I'm spending this much per month, but I'm gaining time, sanity, sleep, time to eat, time to exercise, like a better client experience.
Yes.
Hands down, it's worth it without even thinking about it.
Yeah, it's amazing. So what tips do you have for our listeners who have a full-time job and are trying to run a photography business? Are there any tips where you're like, you have to do this?
One of the big things I implemented was business hours. We have working hours for our day jobs, which we're still kind of in the pandemic right now. So as we all know, that's been incredibly blurred to an unimaginable extent. But if I can have business hours for my day job, you got to have business hours for your photography. Mm-hmm. The advantages to that are, number one, it gives you a schedule. So you can say, okay, I'm only working on this from this time to this time, and then I'm done. Mm-hmm. I can put it away. I can spend time with my family. I can binge Netflix. You're giving yourself that time for a break, mm-hmm. which is really, really important so you don't get burnt out. The other thing that it does is it forces your clients to respect your time, right? One of the other perks of some of the CRM softwares is you can actually have business hours built into it. So it'll only send emails, forms, and whatnot during those business hours. Because it's automated and I don't want to be on top of all my emails, but I want my clients to respect my actual business hours. Mm-hmm. By forcing my system to only send emails during those hours, my clients still think I'm only working during those specific hours. So it's not out of line and it doesn't set up a false expectation that, oh, Mike's up at 10 o'clock sending me this email. I guess he's still working. No, my system's working technically, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. So again, it's enforcing that. Business hours are incredibly helpful from all that standpoint. The other thing that I'll say is that, especially as creatives, we're perfectionists. It's like, I got to do this thing. Mm-hmm. If you don't get it done today, it's okay. It can happen tomorrow. Right. Obviously, some things like have to get done like right then and there, but the vast majority of times, it's okay. Breathe. You can push it one day.
I need to write that like on my wall and put it up somewhere because that sums me up. If someone asks me a question for work or for my business, I feel like I have to respond right away. Mm-hmm. So I just need to obviously listen to this podcast whenever that happens.
Well, there you go. And that actually works for a really nice segue to my next point, which is learn how to block your schedule. And I don't mean, well, actually, I do put up blockers in there. So it's like no meetings or whatever it is. I'm a big proponent of saying, okay, if I'm only working these many days or hours per week, make one of those days just your meetings day. Mm-hmm. If you can, if you have enough time in your schedule to do it, because it'll gives you the time and the space to say, okay, that means these other days I'm focusing on editing. I'm focusing on blogging. I'm focusing on my website. I'm focusing on the marketing or shooting, whatever mm-hmm. it is. For me personally, my business hours say that I'm available Monday through Thursday and then Saturdays. But in truth, I'm working more than that because I'm just a workaholic and I enjoy the work I'm doing. But I only take consultations Tuesdays through Thursdays and on a very small chunk of my Saturdays because I want to save those times for doing other work, especially on Monday. That's kind of like my catch-up day, my admin day where I figure out what the heck I'm doing. And that also leads to my other point, which is the other side of blocking your schedule, which is called block scheduling. So it's saying, okay, I just finished the day job, let's say at 5 o'clock. At 5:30 until 6, I'm going to do emails. After that, I'm going to spend from 6 till 7:30 editing this week's session. That's it. Turn off all the notifications, turn off all the extra distractions, focus on the one thing. 7:30, have dinner, come back, answer any last minute emails, you're done. Tuesday, 5:30 to 6, I'm going to answer emails. From 6 till 7:30, I'm going to work on a blog post for the week. Focus on that one thing, knock out that big chunk of activity and keep repeating that process throughout the rest of your time. The reason why you want to do this, multitasking is a myth. It's completely false. It doesn't work. Okay.
It does not. Because
what happens is you lose time to what I call the switching effect mm-hmm. or squirrel.
Yes.
You're starting an activity on one thing and then a notification pops up. So you drop what you're working on. And you go to the thing, you solve it, you do whatever. Then you come back to the thing you were originally working on and you got to go, crap, where was I? What was I thinking? What was I doing? Where was my mind at? And you lose time getting back into that space where you're like, okay, this is where I was at. Cool. And then you go back through it and then you get another distraction. You really got to block off your time because then you get into a flow state. You're super into it. You're optimized and it's awesome. I say this with also a small caveat in that if you can overlap active and passive tasks, it's really fantastic. So an example of this is I get home from a session, right? What's the first thing I'm going to do? Download the images and back them up. Mm-hmm. Okay. Depending on the shoot, depending on what's going on, that can take anywhere from 5 minutes to 30 minutes, right? If it's a big wedding or whatever, what have you. Okay. What are you doing during that time? I can pack gear. I can get a snack. I can take a shower. I can answer emails. And then once the images are done, now I can move on to something else. But it's finding ways to overlap tasks like that. With my engineering job, I do this a lot. So if I'm working on a new novel design, I'll create the requirements and the specifications for it. I'll do that. And then I'll hand it off to a contract manufacturer and be like, okay, now write the testing protocols that are built off of these requirements. While they're doing that stuff, I'm back to saying, okay, what's the next thing? I got to actually design and build the parts. When the testing protocols are done, I can give them the parts and now they can start testing it. Okay, while they're testing it, I'm now working on the documentation that says we passed the test, fingers crossed. And this way, when I get the data, I can just plug it into the report and I'm done. Mm-hmm. Shrink the time by overlapping active and passive tasks.
Yeah. I feel like you either have a camera in my house somewhere or you're reading my mind, because I was trying so hard not to laugh as you were talking about multitasking. Oh gosh, I have these post-it notes, just little, I mean, they're tiny post-it notes. I have had to start writing the one thing that I'm focusing on down on here. If I'm doing emails, I write emails and I stick it somewhere where I can see it as I'm looking at my computer, because I will go from one thing to the next, the next, the next, and like do 20 things before I end up back at the first. And you're right. Like, I don't remember where I was at that point. I have resorted to these mini sticky notes.
Yep. Yeah. One of the other things that helps is, other than turning your phone over so you can't see it, even put it in a drawer. If you see it on your desk, you're going to want to pick it up and look
at it. Yes, you are.
The other thing I do is, and this is why pandemic has really crushed my soul. One of the ways it's crushed my soul, let me correct that, is I love working in coffee shops.
Mm-hmm.
One, because it's a different space to work in. And two, because it forces me to work off of one monitor.
Yeah.
Okay. When we're at home, we've got multi-monitor setups because it's easy to reference information. Now, if I'm writing a blog post, I'll have my outline on one screen, the references I'm pulling with all the other stuff, and then I'll have the article itself I'm drafting on the third screen. But when I'm editing, or if I'm doing something that's like super concentrated, I will unplug my other monitor so I only have the one to look at. So I'm not having the squirrel effect and seeing other things pop up and look at other screens.
Yep. I can relate. I end up having five different windows pulled up on my screen because I have two monitors. I'm really hoping this whole post-it note thing works, because something has to change. I've also tried setting Alexa for, we have one in our room. She's probably going to talk now.
Four is the only positive number that is both the sum and the product of the same two integers. Four is the only number whose name in English has the same number of letters in its name.
That's the reality of working from home and being a freelancer, though, right?
Hey guys.
Calls, all the kind of stuff. That's the kind of distractions you got to turn off.
Y'all can see my face right now.
She might be redder than a tomato right now. It's kind of wonderful.
My daughter turned that up earlier today and I forgot about it. So anyway, I will set Alexa. We'll go with that for 15 or 30 minute increments so that I know I have to work on one task until she goes off. I'm not going to say her name again.
One other tip to help with block scheduling is certain tasks only need 15, 20 minutes to get into and work on. There are other things, though, where, especially, this is coming from my engineering background, I can't do a meaningful amount of work if I don't have minimum an hour to dig into it, right? Preferably, I want two or three.
That's how I am with editing.
Exactly, editing. Because I can't tell you the number of times, like, I'll start editing a wedding and I got like the white balance dialed in. I know where the exposure is for all the images. You have to put it down, you come back and start editing, and you're like, wait a second, oh crap, these images don't match up, because your brain is in just that little bit of a different space.
Yeah, it's crazy how focusing on one thing and knowing that you have the time for it helps. Oh man. Well, I want to get into pricing. How has having a full-time job affected your photography pricing?
It has affected it negatively and positively. The beauty of having a full-time job is that my full-time job, the way I have set up my life, is it covers my bills, which means photography can pay for photography and can pay for fun stuff. With that, I don't necessarily have to charge as much as I should if it was a full-time gig.
Mm-hmm.
For the longest time, I would argue I was undercharging because I could, because it didn't matter to me, because hey, people are booking me to take pictures and I enjoy this. That's fine. And I'm making some extra dollars and it's paying for itself. Cool beans. I'll say that it's a possible trap.
Yeah.
To have both. You really got to look at things and know what you want to make from photography. If you set that goal of I want to make 10K from photography this year, or whatever your numbers are, you can do the math to figure out what your numbers need to be. You figure out what you need to charge. You'll price yourself much more appropriately. So you don't fall into that trap of, oh, I just needed to pay for one new lens every year, which, I mean, lenses are expensive, but if you're a relatively booked photographer, you can pay off a $1,500 lens pretty quickly.
Yes. It's really interesting to hear about pricing and having a full-time job. I can relate to this as well because I do have a full-time job and I also run my photography business. And at some point, you have to reevaluate. I can't do that many sessions because I have a full-time job, but mm-hmm. I also want to be getting paid what I'm worth. It's tricky to figure it out.
Exactly. You have to figure out that balance. And I'll say one of the things that really, really, I don't want to say hurt me, but it definitely affected the way I thought about pricing, the way I thought about sessions was when you've got a full-time job and you're doing photography on the side, that shoot and burn method looks really, really sexy. Because it's, I edit the photos, I send them off into the ether, I'm done.
Yep.
I never have to think about it again. Versus IPS, or for those of you who don't know what that is, in-person sales, it's a lot more involved. There's a couple of more steps after you're done with the shoot and after you're done editing. There's at least one more client session where you're doing the actual sales with them, unless you can figure out how to do it online, which I'm still trying to crack that code. Because again, easier and more automated for me.
Right.
It's easy to fall into that, you know, shoot and burn method, which if you do shoot and burn, for the most part on the averages, your profit margins are a lot lower than if you're doing in-person sales. Recently, I'll say, actually this past year, I started implementing in-person sales because my schedule was getting a little crazy. Even with the pandemic, I was just like, you know what? I want to shoot less, but make the same money. And the only way I can do that is with IPS.
Right.
So I converted to that and oh my gosh, what a difference. I don't know how it happened. Somehow I got lucky with Google search rankings. My first month of this year, I matched my engineering salary from doing three IPS sessions.
That's amazing.
I was just like, okay, it works. I'm a convert. It's great. Yeah, it's totally doable. Again, it's easy to fall into that trap of wanting to be just a shoot and burn photographer when you've also got a full-time job. Based on what I just said, yeah, it sounds nice to have minimal three meetings per client. Consultation, the shoot, the sales session, and you can make the same as three shoot and burn sessions pretty darn easily.
Right.
I will gladly take that ratio.
Definitely. We've done a few podcast episodes on IPS. I can't remember the numbers exactly. They have wonderful information on them about that. And I've been slowly making the switch over to IPS. The podcast continues to take precedent over everything. So we... I'm trying to figure out how to make the switch while working full-time. For our listeners who are considering quitting their full-time job and doing photography full-time, what advice do you have for them or what things should they consider before they make that decision?
The first thing is know your cost of goods. If you don't know how much it costs to have a photography business, regardless of if it's your full-time gig or your side hustle, you're never going to make the appropriate dollars and you're going to lose out. The other, and this is a tangent, benefit of knowing your cost of goods and your numbers is it takes the emotion out of your pricing. So when someone asks, why do you cost so much? You can just be like, because math.
Exactly.
Like there's no emotion to it. It's just the math says this. Therefore, I charge this. And you can also figure out where you can give breaks if you want to. But again, that was the tangent. You know, you got to know your cost of goods, right? And that's your cost of goods when you've got a full-time job. And then there's also the cost of goods when you're full-time photography, only source of income. And that takes time to research and know like everything that goes into it. Because health insurance as a freelancer, way more expensive than if you got a full-time job, right? Because your employer takes on some of that. And when it comes to taxes, depending on how you're filing, if you're an LLC or sole proprietor, you get double taxed effectively, right? Because FICA, you pay your tax and then typically your employer also pays your share of taxes at the end of the year. That's part of what comes out of your paycheck. FICA is Social Security, all that kind of stuff. So when you're a freelancer, LLC, anything like that, you now have a larger tax burden that you have to pay. So you have to account for that. So it's knowing what are your fixed goods? What are your variable goods? A fixed cost, you have a studio. That's a fixed amount per month that you got to pay. Okay, that's something you got to cover every year. Variable costs are every time I go on a shoot, I bring my clients coffee. That only happens when you have a shoot. So now you have to account for that. You have to throw all that math in there. You have to figure out this is what the business has to make. Cool. Now, what do I want to make on top of that? Because if you're going from full-time to photography, you have to pay yourself. So you got to know what that dollar amount is. You also want to know like how many shoots you want to average per year, which influences the numbers. And again, I'm a nerd and I'm an engineer, so all this math just tickles me. So you got all of that, right? I always worry when I see people jumping into photography full-time, not because I don't want them to do it, because I think they do it too soon. I'm a naturally conservative person in the way I approach things, which is a great aspect for an engineer. You don't want someone who's playing it fast and loose. Don't do that with your bridges. In terms of doing the business stuff, I want to be at the point where I'm almost bursting at the seams with photography and the day job, where I'm like, okay, I've got a consistent client base. I'm not searching for leads every month. They're just coming in and it's predictable. That's when I would say making that switch is super easy, because you know what's coming. You know it's there. If you're struggling to get clients already with photography as a side hustle, it's going to be really, really hard when you make it your full thing, because now you don't have the safety cushion of your actual income from the full-time job. If you want to take that leap before you're bursting at the seams with photography clients, work your butt off at the day job, save your pennies, build up a really good nest egg so that you can rely on that while you're spinning up your photography business.
Yeah. All of this information has been absolutely amazing. I'm excited to go back and listen to this when it comes out. So I am hoping our listeners will love it just as much as I do. If our listeners want to find you on social media, where can they find you?
They can find me on Instagram at Mike Glatzer. That's G-L-A-T-Z-E-R. And that's really the only social media platform I use.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Logan. Thank you so much for having me. It was a great time.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Find Your Focus podcast with Shootproof. Make sure to visit shootproof.com/podcast for the show notes and any links that we talked about today during this episode. If you love this episode, head over to Apple Podcasts and hit that 5-star button. If you ever have feedback or questions for us, feel free to reach out at podcast@shootproof.com.